So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Anil Kaul, who is CEO of Absolute Data. Hi, Anil. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am splendid. Splendid today. So, Anil, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and tell us a little bit about the work that you do?
Sure. So first of all, thank you for having me on this podcast.
My pleasure.
So my name is Anil Kaul, and I am one of the founders and the CEO of Absolute Data.
Uh-huh.
My background is very much in the predictive analytics space. I have a PhD in marketing from Cornell University in the U.S., and subsequently worked at McKinsey as part of their marketing science team, and then, of course, for the last 15 years or so, I have been doing predictive analytics work with Absolute Data.
Fantastic. Wow. So we are in... You've got big brain experience, which is fantastic, because predictive analytics sounds like a fantastic thing, and I understand that you're using predictive analytics to solve what's called the problem of silent customer churn. But before we get into how you do that, first of all, maybe you can tell me about what is it you mean by silent customer churn?
Sure. Silent customer churn, of course, is an interesting term and depends a bit on the context, but I'm going to try to define the way we look at it. The way we describe silent customer churn is where a customer might not cancel your service or might not stop spending with you, but any additional dollars that they're spending or any additional money they're spending is going to your competition. Things that could have been provided by you, and you never hear about it, you never know about it. You would look at a customer and say, this is one of our happy, satisfied customers because they're continuing with our service, while there is a lot of other stuff that they're doing which is going to your competition. So that's how we define silent churn in a certain situation. So it's slightly different from the traditional definition of churn, because traditional definition looks at somebody who stops using a service or a product, so you lose them. While in silent churn, you still have them as a continuing customer, but you're losing a lot of other revenue opportunities that they have.
Okay. So it's a bit like it's almost like having a friend that you're losing touch with gradually.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Okay. I'm just kind of simple analogies from my simple mind. So that's really interesting. How are you kind of using predictive analytics to help some of these kind of problems? Because that's where the fascinating kind of thing is because it's almost like, I guess you're dealing with companies that have thousands and thousands, if not millions of customers, and you're using this technology, this predictive analytics technology, to help solve that problem. So how are you doing that?
Sure. Maybe I can use your analogy of a friend in this case. So, if you have a friend, you can keep tab on what is happening, and if you're losing, connect to them over time, you can find that out. But if you're a company, you have thousands and millions of friends, your customers. So it's very difficult for you to keep a tab on what is really happening with each one of them. And that is where, predictive analytics starts coming in. Because what you have is that you have a lot of data available about the customers that you have. And using predictive analytics, you can start figuring out what is really happening in the customer's purchasing behavior, in their lives, and so on. In fact, many times we use a term which we call customer DNA.
Right.
This is basically saying that using the data that I have available, can I really understand what is happening with the customer? Are they happy with our service? Are they using our service as much as they should have been using? Do they have any unfulfilled needs that we are not providing them that they might be fulfilling elsewhere, and so on and so forth? Now what happens, and what has been particularly happening the last few years is that there is a plethora of data available.
Mm-hmm.
So data is becoming less and less of a problem. We still don't have all the data we need, but it is becoming less and less of a problem. The bigger issue that is becoming now is, given the huge amount of data that I get, how do I figure out what is really happening with my customer base?
Mm-hmm.
And that is where predictive analytics comes in, because it's able to, look through all the data and figure out the critical pieces of information that will tell you what is happening with a particular customer. And again, it's connecting things from one data source to another data source. It's connecting things by looking at various trends that you might be noticing. It is looking at the behavior of other customers, learning from them, and then applying to another customer that you have. So there are all of these different things that are happening in the background using predictive analytics. But the goal is still that I want to know what a customer, you know, is likely to do in the future, and are there any signals in my data that tell me what's going to be that future like.
Okay. That, I mean, so that's all great in sort of like theory, but I guess my question, my interest is around, well, how does that play out in practice? I mean, because in particularly if you have a business person who's not a technologist or doesn't understand necessarily the analytical kind of engine, then they'll be looking to solve business problems and or identify the triggers, as it were. So can you maybe give us some examples of how that works in practice to make it kind of real for our readers and listeners?
Certainly. You know, this, by the way, happens in lots of subscription services. The example that I'm going to use with you is that you have a person, and this is a relevant example, which is with a music subscription company.
Uh-huh.
So you have people who have signed up with a monthly subscription. And what you find is that at a certain point of time, I lose that customer.
Right.
Now, what we have seen many times is by the time somebody cancels their music subscription, it is too late to get them back.
Sure.
Because by this time, they have already signed up with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
They have tried them, they have used them, they have liked them, and then they've taken the decision to cancel.
Mm-hmm.
So what predictive analytics is all about, figuring out that moment, many, many, you know, weeks and days before the actual cancellation happens, as to when is that right time when I could do something to turn that customer around.
So can I interrupt there?
So,
I mean, it's just so as I understand, does that mean that you're looking at the whole data set and then both present and historical, and then you're trying to map where the tipping point is in terms of switching subscriptions, and then working back from there and then thinking about what you need to do in order to try and keep the customer? Is that right?
Exactly. So it is basically saying that, you know, where do we suddenly start seeing a decrease in engagement happening?
Right.
You know, even though and the signals, by the way, will come from, you know, in this case, from the kind of music they're listening, the kind of activities they are doing with your product, you know, are they sharing any lists? And there are a lot of these signals that start coming in. And the moment you have a good predictive model built, it will tell you way before something has happened that this is likely to happen. So what that does is that gives you the time and the opportunity to influence the decision rather than seeing something happen and then trying to bring them back, which is always an extremely difficult thing to do.
Right.
So this, you know, predictive analytics actually gives you an opportunity to be proactive rather than reactive.
Okay, that's great. And is it, I mean, how much more sophisticated does it get? I mean, does it tell you, can you kind of work in the data analysis, can tell you the sort of things like when and how you should be contacting them and with what, and the sort of channels that are most successful in the time of the day and all those different sort of things?
Yes, it's absolutely. In fact, let me give you an interesting example.
Okay.
Outside the business world, but where this is actually a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm talking about the intelligence services,
mm-hmm.
like the NSA in the US. You know, one of their big issues is, well, I'm sure they're listening to our conversation and they're listening to millions of conversations. and they are trying to figure out of these millions of conversations that are going around, which one is the one that is talking about terrorism,
right?
So think of it, you know, of that problem. So what they've been able to do is use a set of predictive models that have been built that actually trigger out the intent of the discussion. So they don't go because, you know, people aren't using the words that you might be looking for. So you have to be able to figure out the intent based on what you're hearing.
Uh-huh.
So these are some analytical techniques that they use, and those are exactly the techniques that we use where we say, let's understand the intent of the customer based on the information that is available to us. So what is happening in the background, and can I figure that out? Because once I figure that out, then I can know that this customer is probably you know, likely losing engagement with our product, with our service, and might be looking at something else. So let's reach out to them.
Okay. Sorry. What I was going to ask was, I was thinking about you're building the model and things, and I guess you've got to, there has to be an element of experimentation to figure out what's going to work. And I guess you probably, or is that going to, is that not, does it work, does the model working work in a different way? Because you've got, I guess you've got groups of customers, say one customer, one group of customers, which is they're solid, they use the application or whatever, and they're great, the level of engagement is high and the risk of them churning is quite low. And then you've got the ones where engagement's falling off and the risk of churning is quite high. Do you then have to set up a series of almost like experiments to figure out what are the right actions to take?
Yeah. So there are basically two things you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
One is you need to learn from your past actions.
Yeah.
Right. So that is the data that's already available to you.
Uh-huh.
So what you need to learn from your past actions is, given this particular customer, right, or this particular customer type, what are the actions in the past that I've run that are most effective in, you know, persuading this customer to change their intent?
Mm-hmm.
And when I say actions, it means, are there any offers that I can send, any email I can send up with some information for them to use a particular feature in my product? What is the right channel? What is the right time? How do I talk to them? So that's, you know, something that you would learn from your past behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The second component is that if I now want to figure out outside of what I've done in the past, is there something new that I should be trying? That is where experimentation and testing comes into play.
Okay.
Right? So you have to be constantly doing these two things, which is learn from the past and then also be creative in testing out new things, so that as soon as the results of those tests come in, I can then use that as information to figure out what I should be doing next.
Yeah.
Now, one point I did want to mention here, which is that predictive analytics is very good.
Right.
And in fact, in most situations, more effective than humans in using the past data to tell you what you should do. But, you know, humans are a lot better at figuring out the creative stuff. What are the new things that we could test? So it is actually a combination of the machine piece,
uh-huh,
and the people piece that you need to bring together,
yes,
to be very effective in doing this.
Okay, that's great. Now, I mean, that's fascinating. I mean, and I guess the way that we view the past is a lot to do, or interpret the past is a lot to do with our cognitive biases that we have and experiences and things. But the way that we view the future, actually, it's good to see that it's not just the predictive analytics may actually just take a rather linear and, if you like, very linear approach, but we're actually, as humans, we take a more creative and emotional sort of view of what could happen, as it were, and how people may actually react to it. But I guess here's my next question: is that, can you give me a couple of examples of firms that have had really sort of solid sort of like success with the use of predictive analytics in terms of, you know, turning their business around or turning their subscription business around and kind of what they did and how they did it, just to bring the whole thing to life?
Sure. So in fact, I can share two examples with you. One is the subscription business, and the other I can actually also share from the financial services industry,
okay,
where silent churn also becomes an issue. So on the first one, on the subscription side, absolutely. You know, so I'll go back to our music client.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a company that competes with iTunes, you know, and iPhone and the whole thing. So it's,
yeah,
a pretty tough space to be in.
Yes, indeed.
But, you know, and what they were essentially facing is the issue that they had a lot of silent churn happening. People were shifting. And using predictive models, we were able to figure out two things. One was, who are the customers that, you know, you can never turn around? You know, don't even spend a whole lot of time because your product does not fit their needs.
Right.
More importantly, the set of customers that what we call are persuadables, right? These are customers that are likely to churn, but they are persuadable, so you can do something about it. So that was the first big step that we did in our predictive analytics.
Okay.
The second thing that we did was, for the customer group that we would identify is likely to churn,
uh-huh,
use data to figure out what are the action steps you can take and when to take them.
Uh-huh.
And more importantly, not just one action step, right? Which is that, because, you know, the tendency of a lot of people tends to be, I'm going to lose this customer. Let me send them a month free or 15% off or 20% off. And what we showed to them through predictive analytics is that a big part of the people who were planning to leave were not leaving because they didn't want to pay that money. In fact, they were paying the same amount of money to the competition, but because they didn't see enough value in the product. Yeah. So the whole exercise went away from, let me give them a month free so that they stay, to let me make sure they experience that aha moment.
Yes.
Where they say, this is my music subscription service. I have no reason to go to someone else.
Okay.
Right? And so predictive analytics would actually identify, here is a series of actions that a person takes when they go and hit that aha moment. After that, this is their service, and you don't have to worry about losing them for a long time.
Okay.
So this is how predictive analytics comes into action. Now, of course, the point that you brought up, which is, you know, we can go back and look at our previous data, run some, you know, campaigns based on that. But we also have to be creative, create some new offers, come up with new ideas mm-hmm. of how do we communicate what we want to communicate, and then test those out and see what that works. So in this particular case, we reduced their churn by about 35%.
Okay.
Over a period of six months. But it did take, you know, a lot of heavy lifting from data, and then certainly working closely with the retention team to make that happen. So that's one. The second example is a very different case. This is actually for a bank
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you had customers who had a primary relationship with, you had a nice checking account, savings account. But what they noticed was that they were losing a lot of business because whenever customers went and wanted to, for example, do stock trading or wanted to, you know, do other financial transactions, they never thought of them as the company to do it with. They were going to competition, they were going to other areas. So the silent churn in this case was happening because you were losing additional business that you could get from your customer, but they didn't think of you as the company, even though when you had a good relationship with them, as who they would bring that business to. So predictive analytics in this particular case was about figuring out when is the right time to start talking to this particular customer about the next product they will buy.
Right.
So, and part of that was predicting what is the next product they're most likely to buy.
Yeah.
And it's a very fascinating exercise because, you know, you could literally, you know, when we started off, we never thought that we could predict that very well, you know, as to are you next going to be doing something, you know, which product you will buy. But we found out that we actually were about 65 to 70% accurate in predicting the couple, you know, a time range in terms of months and the product that a customer is likely to be looking for, so that you could start communicating to them with the information, reaching out to them, letting them know that we've got something, and by the way, also letting them know why it will be much easier and more convenient for you if you continue and just grow this relationship rather than go to somebody else for that individual product. And that's something where, you know, again, This took much longer, about 2 years, to eventually finish. But you could see significant impact, and the metric that we used there was what is the average number of products mm-hmm. that customers were buying, and they actually were able to increase that almost by 25%.
Wow. I mean, it's interesting because that's similar to another story, an example of the use of analytics that somebody else told me about that's come from, I think it was a bank. And what they found is that they did a piece of analysis, and they sort of grouped a whole bunch of people together by demographics, psychographics, all those type of things. So we get common groups and common profiles. And what they were ended up doing, rather than actually putting the resources into their sales channels to try and, you know, they identified there was a group of customers that had a set of three different products, and there was a journey that went from product one to product two to product three. But they also found that there was another group that had gone product one, product two, but hadn't quite graduated to product three yet. And rather than actually just pushing that through their sales channels, they actually asked their tellers in their branches to say, oh, we've done some work, we see that kind of customers like you tend to take this product that you've already got, but then they can take this one as well. And the conversion rate that the tellers got with no sales training was 40%, which just sort of shows the value of actually doing the work, I guess.
Exactly. And in fact, you know, the whole, I believe that the whole notion of marketing and customer centricity is not that you can sell somebody that they don't want. It is that you can provide them the product at the right time,
yeah,
at the right place, and they will, of course, buy it then.
Okay. And so here's a thing that's occurred to me, Anil, is that, so for the, do you have any insight into the impact on, if you like, for the customers that you've stopped churning, these silent customer churn folks, that is there an impact on overall retention, levels of loyalty, satisfaction for those customers that have the companies worked hard to keep?
Absolutely. You know, so see, the thing is, when customers feel that they're being taken care of,
yeah,
they build a relationship and a sense of loyalty to you. Mm. And the sense of being taken care of means, of course, provide them a good value for money, provide them a good product, provide them good customer service, but it also means anticipating your needs and being able to provide you what you are really looking for. Because the moment companies do that, you know, customers start building up a much stronger loyalty and a relationship with that brand, with that product, with that service.
Yeah.
And hence, you are not only gaining in the short term,
yeah,
which is your customer churn will go down, but you're actually gaining tremendously in the longer term as well, because you're creating a set of customers who are your loyal fan base, who realize that this company and this product takes care of me because they inform me and let me know when I need something and do it in a way which, you know, helps me reach my goals. So they are helping me rather than just trying to sell to me.
Yeah.
And that's a big, big, big benefit that you get out of this.
Absolutely. So, Neil, I mean, that sounds fantastic, but as you say, a lot of work and there's some heavy lifting involved. But if there's a company or an entrepreneur, an executive who is sat here listening in to the recording or reading the highlights, and they're thinking, well, we've got a lot of data and we can probably use or benefit from that. I mean, where would you suggest they get started? I mean, other than giving you a call, obviously. But where would if they go, I want to tackle this predictive analytics beast and see how it can add value to my business, where would you advocate that they get started?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the traditional answer to that is start with your data.
Yeah.
My answer to that is actually completely opposite of that.
Cool.
Which is start with the business problem.
Right.
Figure out what is the problem that will have the biggest impact on your business. Okay. Work back from that. Figure out, you know, what is the information that will help me solve that problem in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Take a step back and say, to get that information, what do I need from a data perspective?
Mm-hmm.
And then next step is look at what is the data that is available from what I need.
Sure.
Now, what you will find is for any company or any person starting, you will never have 100% of the data that you need, or you will never have 100% of the tools and techniques that you need.
Mm-hmm.
But you can actually still get tremendous value with whatever data you have.
Yes.
And, you know, again, you might not get 100% of the benefit that you could, but you get enough that helps you build confidence, capability, and experience in analytics that then you can start investing in a bigger way, you know, spending money to build your data infrastructure, your analytics infrastructure, and so on and so forth.
Okay. So I guess, in short, what you're basically saying is don't start with the data because you don't know what you're looking for.
Exactly. Start with the problem, work backwards.
Fantastic. So on this sort of subject, Anil, is there anything that we've missed that you'd like to mention before I ask you my final famous question? Well, famous in my world, but my final and famous question.
No, I think I think the only thing I would add is that, you know, there are a lot of people who talk about data and analytics, but I think there are still a relatively smaller number of people and companies who are really getting the value out of that. So there is a whole lot of value that we, as a company, as an organization, and when I'm talking about we means our listeners, can get out of the data. But, you know, you have to do it the right way, and the opportunity still is very, very open. That's going to be my final comment.
Perfect. And so that brings me to my final question, and it's this, Anil. It's a, is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Of course. You know,
go ahead.
90% of my job is selling, so I am certainly going to do that. So, you know, all the things that I was talking about, of course, in this particular talk have been about silent customer churn, but you know, we've actually applied all of that methodology in developing a couple of products internally.
Uh-huh.
So we have a product which is called Nowik Converter that uses the data that you have available and actually provides you recommendations about what campaign to run, with what offer to target, which particular customer, when to target them, in a way that actually moves the needle on your metrics, on your business metrics. So you just say, here is the goal I have. You know, so you might have a goal which says, I want to reduce my churn by X percent.
Uh-huh.
We will take that goal, work through that platform, and tell you, here are three campaigns that you should run this week, another two you should run next week, another you should run a week after, and you will start seeing the results coming in.
And what's the name of that product, Anil?
It's called Nowik Converter, N-A-V-I-K. And, you know, and we have customers where we've shown results, improvements of 35-40% in like 3 months.
Wow.
In such a short time.
That's fantastic. So, Anil, that's very exciting. And I can see how there's a lot of talk about big data. And there's a lot of talk about analytics. But I think that's exactly what it is, a lot of talk. And so it's really good to sort of to hear somebody who's in the space actually talking about starting with the business and actually, you know, and dealing with kind of real problems. And the silent customer churn, I think, is one which is a perennial one. And if we can stop, if we can help, if you like, fix companies' leaky buckets or kind of minimize the leaks in their buckets, then that's going to be, can only do good for their overall sort of sustainability and growth. So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and insights with us. That's been great.
Well, thank you, Adrian, for giving me the opportunity to do that. I appreciate that very much.
You're very welcome.